1. England, 1814. Lord Charles Brooksbank leaned his shoulder against the column in the ballroom as he watched his brother and new sister-in-law dance the opening set. It was evident how much they cared for each other by the enamoured looks on their faces. That is what he wanted, to fall irrevocably in love with someone. But he was starting to give up hope that he would ever find a woman who would pique his interest. He had been swayed by many beautiful faces over the years, but he found most to be quite dull as he grew to know them, especially when they resorted to polite conversational topics. After all, how could you ever truly get to know someone else when you were forced to only discuss the weather or state of the gardens? A servant walked by with a tray of champagne, and Charles reached for one. At least he could drown his sorrows with something to drink. He wasn't terribly unhappy. He was just lonely. Perhaps he should seek out Lady Berkshire and her sisters. A matchmaker might solve all his problems, or it could create a myriad of new ones. Frankly, he wasn't sure what the right answer was, but he knew it was time for him to grow serious about finding a bride. He saw his dark-haired friend, Lord Brixton, break through the crowd and approach him.
"Why the solemn face?" he asked.
Charles took a sip of his drink. "I am dreading the remainder of this ball."
"That is not good, since it has only just begun."
"I am well aware." Brixton turned his attention towards Roswell and Ellie in the centre of the room.
"Your brother seems happy."
"That he does." Brixton grinned.
"I never thought I would see the day that Roswell fell prey to the parson's mousetrap."
"I must agree with you, but Ellie is his match." Brixton's eyes scanned the room.
"I have noticed many new faces this evening."
"Is that so?" Charles asked, feigning interest.
"It is," Brixton said. "A new season always brings a fresh crop of wide-eyed debutantes with dreams of securing an advantageous marriage."
Charles gulped down the rest of his drink.
"I am not interested in a debutante."
"Why ever not?
They are barely out of the schoolroom, and it is painful to attempt a conversation with them."
Brixton chuckled.
"If she has a beautiful face, then what else matters?"
"I don't wish to be shackled to a woman who is dull."
"Your standards are too high."
"I contend that they are not."
The music came to an end, and Charles watched as Roswell escorted his wife off the chalked dance floor. Brixton turned to face him.
"Have you secured a dance partner for the next set?"
"I have not."
"Then let's go find you one."
Charles placed his empty glass onto the tray of a passing servant.
"I think I am going to sit this one out."
Brixton eyed him curiously.
"Are you ill?"
"No. Why do you ask?"
"Because you never lack for dance partners."
"I dare say that you are reading entirely too much into this," Charles said. "I just want to be alone for a moment."
"As you wish," Brixton said, "but I shall be back after this next set."
Charles watched as Brixton disappeared into the crowd before heading towards the veranda. As he stepped outside, he saw the full moon lit up the gardens. He started walking along one of the footpaths, coming to a stop in front of a pond situated in the rear of the property. He sat down on the iron bench and watched as a frog hopped off a lily pad into the water. He leaned back against the bench and sighed. He had a life that most people would be envious of, but he was tired of pretending all was well. He wanted more than his lonely existence. What was wrong with him? This ball was to celebrate his brother and sister-in-law's marriage, but it only seemed to remind him that he was alone. He wanted a wife who challenged him and made him a better man. He had seen what Ellie had done for Roswell, and he wanted that as well. The sound of leaves rustling above him drew Charles's attention. He glanced up and saw a young woman sitting on a large branch. She was pretty enough, with her oval face, fair skin, and deep-set eyes. Her shiny brown hair was piled atop her head, though a few strands had escaped and curled against her cheeks. He rose from his seat and stepped closer to the tree.
"Whatever are you doing up there?" he demanded.
She muttered something incoherent under her breath.
"Would you mind pretending that you didn't notice me?"
"I am afraid I cannot do that."
"Why not?"
"You are in a tree, dressed in a ball gown," Charles said. "I'm afraid I find myself most curious about how you arrived there."
"That is simple," she replied. "I climbed."
"In a ball gown?" The young woman shrugged.
It isn't much different than climbing trees in an afternoon gown. I take it you climb trees all the time then?
Not all the time, she replied. Just when the situation warrants it.
He gave her a curious look.
And this situation warranted it?
It did. Would you care to expand on that?
She let out a puff of air.
If you must know, I was walking in the gardens and I slipped, she confessed, smoothing down her white gown. I landed in some mud and soiled my gown.
Your dress doesn't appear ruined to me.
That is because it is on the back of the dress.
He put his hands up.
What is your plan exactly? He asked.
Do you intend to stay in the tree all night?
The young woman glanced helplessly in the direction of the townhouse.
Eventually, my mother will come looking for me, and she will be able to help me.
In what way? I am not entirely sure.
Knowing he was duty-bound to help this young woman, Charles asked, Would you care for me to go inform your mother of your precarious situation?
She shook her head, causing the curls to sway back and forth.
I think not.
Is there a reason why?
Because we haven't been properly introduced yet.
He grinned, finding the irony in her statement.
If you would prefer, I could always help you, he said.
How would you do that? She asked, looking unsure. Charles put his finger up to his lips when he noticed a couple was approaching him on the footpath. He leaned his shoulder against the trunk of the tree and tipped his head at the gentleman to acknowledge him. It wasn't long before the couple was out of earshot. He straightened and looked back up at the young woman.
I am familiar with these grounds and can help you get to the front of the townhouse without anyone seeing you, he informed her.
How would you accomplish that feat?
There is a path the servants use that leads from the gardens to the street, he shared. It isn't far from where we are now.
That would be wonderful, she replied eagerly.
You just have to get out of the tree now and I can show you.
The young woman reared back.
I'm afraid I can't do that.
Why not?
You will see the stain on my dress.
Charles chuckled. That is your main concern at the moment. He could see the indecision on her face, and he feared that she would reject his assistance. If that was the case, he could always go retrieve his mother to offer aid. Finally, after a long moment, she spoke.
I suppose I would be grateful for your assistance, but you must promise not to watch me as I climb down the tree.
Would it help if I turned around?
She nodded.
It would. Charles turned around and heard the young woman climbing down the tree. He found her stubbornness quite humorous.
You may turn around now, she said.
He did so and offered his arm.
Would you like me to escort you to the path?
The young woman glanced down at his proffered arm.
I think not.
No.
What if someone saw us? She asked.
Charles smiled, finding this whole situation quite amusing.
It might be best if you just follow me then.
He stepped further into the trees that ran the length of the garden and was pleased to hear the young woman following him. Once he arrived at the gate, he turned to face her. This path will take you to the street.
Where my coach will no doubt be waiting, she remarked, relief in her voice.
Then I shall have a footman send word to my mother.
Would you care for me to accompany you?
No, thank you.
Charles took a step closer to her.
Would you tell me your name, since I offered you assistance?
That wouldn't be very appropriate.
That may be true, but we did meet under unusual circumstances, he pressed. She clasped her hands in front of her, and he could hear the hesitancy in her voice.
You may call me Henrietta.
That is a beautiful name.
I was named after my grandmother, she rushed out. She was much taller than me, but we both are quite stubborn.
That is, informative.
He wasn't quite sure what to say to that.
The young woman frowned. I do apologize, but I tend to rattle on when I am nervous.
That is something that you and I have in common.
Truly?
He nodded.
Truly, but there is no reason for you to be nervous.
She gave him a look that implied she didn't believe him.
I am alone with a gentleman, and my gown is ruined, she said. My entire reputation revolves around me getting to the coach without being seen.
I can help with that.
She put her hand up.
You have done enough, kind sir.
He opened the gate and watched as she manoeuvred so he couldn't see the back of her gown. Once she had backed through the gate, he said, Until we meet again, Henrietta.
I doubt that our paths will ever cross again, she responded, stopping a few feet away from him.
At least, I hope not.
Why is that?
She smiled, her eyes sparkling in the moonlight.
You may have been my hero tonight, but I truly hope that you forget all about me.
I'm afraid that might not be possible.
Why is that?
I have never seen a young woman climb a tree in a ball gown before, he said, I find it quite extraordinary.
Then you are associating with the wrong people, she teased.
His lips twitched. I wish you luck in getting to your coach.
I can be quite crafty when the situation warrants it.
I shall have to take your word for it.
Charles found himself staring at her, abruptly transfixed. There was something about her he found intriguing, and he wasn't quite ready to say goodbye. But it was evident that Henrietta did not feel the same, because she said, I should be on my way.
Of course, he replied. I won't keep you any longer.
He slowly closed the gate to ensure it latched quietly. Once it was closed, he watched Henrietta hurry down the path. As he walked back towards the townhouse, Charles realized he had never given the young woman his name. That had been a mistake on his part. She may not want to see him again, but he found himself hoping that their paths would cross soon. Miss Henrietta Whiston awoke and let out a groan. She wasn't ready to wake up. She had been having the most wonderful dream about the man who had saved her the night before. It wasn't until she reached her coach that she realized she hadn't caught his name. Not that it would matter. She had no intention of ever seeing that man again. A knock came at the door, interrupting her musings. Enter, Henrietta ordered, as she sat up in her bed. The door opened, and her dark-haired lady's maid stepped into the room. Good morning, miss, she said, closing the door.
Good morning.
Abigail smiled. How are you faring this morning?
I am well, but I admit that I am not looking forward to the inevitable tongue-lashing from my parents, Henrietta admitted.
Why do you suppose that is?
My father wasn't pleased that he was forced to leave the ball early to accompany me home, and he informed me that we would be speaking about my antics today.
Abigail walked over to the dressing table and began organising it.
Perhaps he will forget.
My father is not one to forget, Henrietta replied. Neither is my mother.
I should note that I was unable to remove the mudstain from your gown, Abigail informed her. I'm afraid it is quite ruined.
That is most unfortunate. Henrietta tossed off her covers and put her feet over the side of the bed. I have no doubt that I shall be lectured on that as well. Abigail placed her hand on the back of the dressing table's chair.
Shall we prepare ye for the day?
I believe that would be best. Henrietta rose with a sigh. I don't wish to be late for breakfast, which might infuriate my parents even more.
After she was situated on the chair, Abigail began to brush her brown tresses.
How exactly did you soil your gown again? She asked.
I slipped and landed in some mud.
I see. But why were you in the gardens unaccompanied?
My mother granted me permission to step out onto the veranda.
And you slipped on the veranda?
Henrietta shook her head.
No, I slipped on one of the footpaths when I went to admire the rose bushes.
How did you end up in a tree then?
After I fell, I panicked when I saw a couple step outside, she confessed. I couldn't very well make my presence known, so I rushed into a cluster of trees that were just off the main path. Then I thought it only made sense to climb a tree to remain out of sight.
That was most foolhardy on your part.
I would agree that climbing the tree wasn't the most logical choice, but I'm afraid I didn't quite know what to do, given the circumstances.
Abigail set the brush down and picked up some hairpins.
It was most fortunate that gentleman assisted you.
It was, but I don't dare inform my parents that anyone saw me.
How do they think you arrived at the coach?
Henrietta reached for a bottle of lotion and began to rub it onto her arms.
I told them that I found a pathway that led to the main street undetected.
Abigail stepped back.
Do you think it is wise to lie to your parents?
I am just omitting the part about the gentleman helping me, she replied. My parents would be furious if I told them that I had been alone with a gentleman in the gardens.
You make a good point. Abigail walked over to the armoire and removed a pale pink gown.
I thought this would suffice for today.
I think it is lovely.
Do try to avoid staining this gown, Abigail teased.
Henrietta smiled. I will make every effort to prevent it.
After she was dressed, Henrietta exited her bedchamber and headed for the breakfast parlour on the main floor. She had just descended the stairs when she saw the butler approaching her. He was an older, thin man with grey hair and possessed a smile that could immediately set someone at ease.
Good morning, Walters greeted, coming to a stop in front of her. I trust you slept well.
I did.
Walters bobbed his head in approval. Lord and Lady Finsbury are in the parlour, and they just sent word for you to join them.
She sighed. Wonderful, she muttered. Walters gave her an encouraging smile.
I wish you luck, miss.
Henrietta stepped into the parlour. Her father was sitting at the head of the table with a morning newspaper in his hand. Her mother was sitting to the right of him, looking elegant with her neatly coiffed hair and blue gown. As she walked over to the buffet table, Henrietta saw her mother and father exchange a pointed look with one another. Botheration, she thought, and accepted a plate from a footman. She set a piece of plum cake on it and went to sit across from her mother. She had just reached for her napkin when her father folded the newspaper and laid it down onto the table. He cleared his throat and she winced a little.
Your mother and I would like to speak to you about your antics last night.
I assumed you would. Her mother spoke up. You should be most grateful that no one saw you slip in that mud or discovered you making your way to the coach.
I am.
Reputations have been ruined for much less, her mother pressed. Henrietta leaned to the side as a footman placed a cup of chocolate in front of her. I was aware of what was at stake, which is why I was extremely careful to not be seen.
You must think of someone other than yourself, her father said. If you are ruined, it could jeopardise Marjorie's prospects as well.
I understand, Henrietta responded, reaching for the cup of chocolate.
Her mother gave her a disapproving look.
Marjorie is in her fourth season and has yet to secure a match. It is crucial that she does so this season.
Why is that?
Because she is 22, and I worry that she may become a spinster, her mother replied.
I don't believe that will happen, Henrietta said. Marjorie is just ensuring she picks the right suitor.
Her father interjected, One can be too picky when choosing a suitor.
With an approving nod, her mother remarked,
Well said, Graham.
I must disagree with you, Henrietta said. Picking a suitor should be the most thought-provoking decision one must ever make.
Until Marjorie is married, you don't even have the luxury of entertaining that thought, her mother said.
I am in no rush to marry.
Of course you are, her mother stated. Your beauty won't last forever, and then you will be left with nothing.
I will be left with my mind and my many accomplishments.
Her father huffed. Men don't care about young women's minds.
How archaic, Henrietta muttered under her breath. He gave her a pitying look.
Men marry for beauty, but women must marry for security. That is the way it has always been done.
That doesn't make it right, Henrietta contended.
Furthermore, a young lady must be the epitome of grace, and they do not slip in the mud, her mother pressed.
I shudder to think of your marital prospects if anyone had seen you.
But no one did, Henrietta lied.
You were lucky to find that pathway that led to the street, her mother remarked. If you hadn't, then everyone would have seen your soiled dress at the ball.
I agree.
Her father rose. If you'll excuse me, I am late for a meeting, he said. I believe we have given Henrietta enough of a tongue-lashing for today.
After her father left the room, her mother gave Henrietta a knowing look. Do you want to explain why you had rips in your gown?
It was from when I fell, she attempted.
Perhaps you should at least try to make the lie believable.
Henrietta glanced over her shoulder before admitting, After I fell, I climbed a tree to remain out of sight from the other guests.
Her mother shook her head. I should have assumed that was the case, she said. But you can't climb trees while we are in town. It just isn't done.
I know, but I was left with little choice, Henrietta argued.
While reaching for her teacup, her mother asked, Did anyone see you?
She paused as she took a sip of her drink. And I would like the truth this time.
Henrietta lowered her gaze.
A gentleman spotted me in the tree.
I see, her mother replied with a frown. Did this man recognise you?
No, he did not.
Did he show you the path to the street?
She nodded. He did.
Her mother set the teacup back on the saucer. I must admit that your antics are not as amusing as you get older.
I am sorry, mother.
Let us hope that you never cross paths with this gentleman again.
That is my hope as well.
Rules are much more stringent in London. You must be careful with your reputation, because it is the most important thing in the world to a young lady such as yourself.
I understand.
Good, her mother replied, wiping the sides of her mouth with her napkin. Now, finish your breakfast, and we shall adjourn to the drawing room.
Henrietta stifled the groan on her lips. Do I have to join you in the drawing room?
You do, her mother replied. We need to be available for callers. But no one will be calling for me. That matters very little. You must know that by now. I do, but I was hopeful I could go riding this morning. Her mother glanced over to the window before saying, Just make it quick. Are you in earnest? Henrietta asked, rising. I am, but you must promise to behave for the rest of the day. Henrietta smiled. I can promise that. With a stern look, her mother said, And no more climbing trees while we are in London. Yes, mother. Her mother's face softened. Then be off with you, child, before I change my mind.